You already know what we're going to talk about. Planet X in 2012. So instead of starting there, let's start with where you're at right now. You're looking at the world about you, and a little voice inside is saying, Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. The blinders are being ripped off your head, and you instinctively know there is no putting them back on. But that's not the hard part, nor are the answers you secretly dread. Rather, it's the first question we all ask ourselves at moments like this. Am I nuts or what? No, you're not nuts. In fact, when I visualize a person such as yourself listening to this audio, I like to think of you as standing on a pier and counting the number of lifeboats on the Titanic while you do the math in your head. Now, if you can imagine yourself standing on that pier, what will you do after you've done the math and it doesn't add up? Are you going to ignore it because you're itching to get on board and throw confetti with everyone else? Or will you quietly turn around and go home? After all, it's better to be a live nut in the safety of your own home than a lifeless crab cake at the bottom of the sea. Granted, the sudden awareness of an impending natural cataclysm can be a troubling epiphany, to say the least. But you're not alone. Everyone arrives at this same point in their own journey of self-education and in much the same manner. You need to gather your data, analyze it, and then draw conclusions that firmly resonate in your own gut. This topic is not a heat-and-serve TV dinner. Rather, you've got to cook it yourself if you really want to survive what's coming. All of the information you need is freely available on the internet. The books and audio courses we provide will help you to significantly speed the self-education process. But again, you've got to cook it yourself. So let's start the process with where you're at right now, at this very moment, because I want you to know something. You're already doing the right things. You've gotten this far in the program for at least two of the following three reasons. One, you're aware of the world around you. Two, you're willing to objectively examine cause and effect relationships. And three, you possess the ability to think outside the box. Well then, let's get down to brass tacks and talk briefly about the bad news and what the Earth is going to go through, and then how you get through it. Between now and 2013, the Earth will experience horrific cataclysms and at an ever-increasing pace. They will be the result of a large object, generically referred to as Planet X, and it will soon pass through the core of our solar system. This object was first observed in 1983 by NASA's Infrared Astronomical Satellite, more commonly known as IRAS, and was reported in the September 10, 1984 edition of U.S. News and World Report. Many times the size of Earth, it is very large and dark and dusty, and will not be visible to the naked eye for a few years. When it does, it will appear in the sky like a smaller second sun before it leaves the core of our system. While man-made pollution does aggravate global warming, the inconvenient omission I was mentioning before is really dealing with the interaction between the Sun and Planet X. You see, it is the Sun that is the principal engine of global warming for Earth as well as Mars and Pluto. Scientists at the Max Planck Institute in Germany tell us our Sun has been in a frenzy since 1940 and that it is more violent now than at any time in the last 1,000 years. Furthermore, NASA tells us that 2012 will be the Sun's most violent period in all of modern history. Planet X has been here several times before, and it is incredibly well documented in ancient folklore and wisdom texts, including the Torah, or Old Testament as it is known. The ancient Sumerians called it Nibiru. The Egyptians called it the Destroyer. The Celts called it the Frightener, and the Mayans called it the Red Comet. This list of ancient accounts is much longer, but what is really important is that all of these ancient cultures have warned us of Planet X's return and the cataclysms it is sure to bring. Each flyby of this massive object is different, and therefore causes different tribulations. For example, the last two caused Noah's flood and the 10 plagues of Exodus. What will happen this time? That is difficult to say, but one thing is for certain. The dead will not be counted in the thousands or millions, but rather in the billions. That's why our governments are quietly going about the business of making preparations for this next flyby. Let's be frank. What I've just told you is breathtaking, if not downright overwhelming. So let's let this bad news settle for a moment, just put it to the side. And let me share with you my own journey of self-education and how it led me to this point. Do not be surprised if you have a similar story of your own. When I make radio and TV guest appearances, I often like to point out that I walk straight backwards into this whole topic, just as most of us do. In my case, it was a direct result of having been a science features field producer for Cable News Network back in the late 80s. I covered science stories coming out of the university and colleges in Texas, and as a result of continually being on the lookout for newsworthy science stories, I acquired what's called a nose for the news. Once you get it, unusual stories with interesting angles just seem to leap out at you. When I moved to California to get into the computer business, I left my CNN days behind me and took with me my nose for the news as well as my admiration for the professionals I'd worked with and from whom I had learned so very much. A year after the fall of the Soviet Union, I was quite taken with events, and so I started a travel business specializing in tours to Russia and other former Eastern Bloc countries. In preparation for my spring and summer seasons, I would fly from San Francisco to Moscow each year during the December-January timeframe. I flew on Aeroflot because their polar route was the fastest and most comfortable way to get there and back. The outbound trips were always at night, but the return trip was always during the day. And my first round trip in 1992 was simply breathtaking. I grew up in the hot deserts of Arizona, so to me, snow was something you bought in little cups at the local convenience store during the summer. So you can imagine how awestruck I was in seeing the beautiful Arctic snow and ice fields passing beneath me. That first trip was like, well, your first taste of chocolate ice cream. Zowie! It was so beautiful, pristine and unbroken for as far as I could see, and from a height of 35,000 feet, you can see a far ways. Gosh, it was awesome. I can still see it in my mind's eye. And sadly, how it deteriorated consistently over time. Each year from 1992 to 1998, I always flew the same route at about the same time and saw the same beautiful landscape passing beneath the Aleutian jetliners that Aeroflot flies. As with all things in life, one expects ups and downs, and in 1992, I expected to see the Arctic landscape have its own good years and bad years. Yet there was only one good year, 1992. From 93 to 98, I watched this pristine and unbroken landscape progressively deteriorate over time, until in 1998, it resembled the shattered windshield of a wrecked automobile. Debunkers be damned. I saw what I saw, and I watched it happen before my very eyes. As a former CNN science features field producer, I could not dismiss it all by saying something trivial like, "Well, I'm nuts because I must be seeing things." No doubt you've had similar experiences as well. And for me, it was deeply troubling, especially my last trip in 98. To help put this in perspective, in 2003, a group of wealthy American travelers chartered an icebreaker to take them to the North Pole. Once the ship arrived, what they found was mostly slush and it took them a considerable amount of time to find a piece of ice big enough for the travelers to stand upon. Then in June 2007, Russian President Vladimir Putin laid claim to a vast polar region that has always been international territory, and what could only be viewed as a Stalin-esque land grab. 5 times the size of Great Britain, experts say this contested Arctic region possesses petroleum reserves equal to those of Saudi Arabia. Why is this now possible? Because the Arctic melting I first observed during my winter trips to Russia in the 1990s has finally progressed to a point where oil and gas exploration are now possible. But back to cases. In 1999, I began researching global warming with Jaco van der Warp in the Netherlands, Janice Manning in California, and Steve Russell in Australia. What we quickly realized was that even though environmentalists were still painted as lunatic tree huggers at that time, more and more scientists were coming around to their point of view. Still, the confusion was so awful that instead of trying to sort through all of the moral and financial agendas that seemed to be so deeply embedded in the topic, we opted to look outside the box. Given that Earth is not the only planet in our solar system with an atmosphere, we wanted to see if it was the only one evidencing signs of global warming. What we found would forever change our lives, and yours as well. Being secular scientific thinkers, my fellow researchers and I narrowed our search of the solar system down to internet sites such as NASA, JPL, and so forth, so that we could avoid sources that were difficult to vet. Our goal was to find signs of global warming or other surface perturbations elsewhere in the solar system. Once we started looking at the data reported by these sites, what we found in 1999 stunned us. Imagine that you're standing in the middle of a dark theater when a lighting technician suddenly begins switching on every bank of lights in the house. First comes the clack, clack, clack of switches, and then you have to cover your eyes until they adjust to this new reality. That's what happened to us. Not only was the Earth showing signs of global warming, so was Mars. In fact, if global warming on Earth were as severe as it is on Mars, we would be in the midst of an extinction-level event at this very moment. Even cold and distant Pluto was evidencing signs of global warming. From there, the evidence just kept piling up as we studied each planet in turn. In a manner of speaking, you could say that every bulb on the tree was brightly lit. So like any other string of Christmas lights, there's gotta be a plug in the wall. And in this troubling string of lights, that led straight back to our sun. It was then that we realized that global warming, such as we're experiencing now, is principally caused by solar activity, and that man-made pollution is only an aggravating factor. That's not to underplay our foolish consumption hubris, for it is driving us to weaken the biosphere we need to protect us in the difficult years ahead. So there we were in 2000, at the end of our research, and with the unanimous decision that the sun is the principal cause of global warming, and that man-made pollution is simply an aggravating factor. We knew there was more to this story, but at that point we were all exhausted and, frankly, troubled by what we discovered. For me, it was the perfect time to take a long-awaited vacation,